So, this is like Christmas for me today.
Oh, Jesus. What now?
It is the beginning of the CrossFit game. First day of the CrossFit.
The Hunger Games.
The Hunger Games.
This is ridiculous, man. Like, they're riding bicycles.
I know.
It's like the swimming, most running.
Boring Tour de France I've ever seen.
Yeah, I'm not going to lie. It's day one, not the highlight reel.
Now, do you think the location is dictating the exercise selection?
Yeah, absolutely. Like, until now, they've been in Southern California. They've been on the beach.
Weather looks shitty. Like, it looks absolutely terrible.
Yeah, the first event just started raining on them while they were running.
Yeah, I mean, I have friends. Like, we have friends from, like, Wisconsin.
You have friends?
Well, I mean, outside people that I know people that are from there, and it's like, they're not there anymore, and for good reason.
Yeah.
It doesn't seem like there's a whole lot going on. Like, I think I saw tumbleweed, like, rolling through one of the bike events.
Fun fact.
Actually?
They're doing burpees over bales of hay this year.
Wow. That's, jeez. Yeah.
Very Wisconsin.
This is, like, they're just, like, walking their bikes through, like, arbitrary things of sand. It's just, anyways.
That's all right. Anyways.
Yeah. But I don't even know what number we're at. Doesn't matter.
27, 28?
It's 28, 28, I think. Correcting imbalances. This is like personal to me because this is everything. Every person that self-diagnoses herself in the office is, I'm unbalanced and I'm pretty sure I'm compensating. Which is like, I'm pretty sure the sky is blue. They don't know why it's blue, and it's true, but there's just, that's kind of the blanket statement that you get from anyone that's injured. Oh, I'm pretty sure I'm compensating on this side. Like, I wish we had three legs and three arms, because it's like, someone's right toe will hurt, and be like, oh, I'm pretty sure I'm compensating, and that's why my ear hurts or something. So people, like, really extrapolate out.
Wait. Let's bring this back. Why would we have to have three arms for their ear?
Well, because, like, if you have three, if you had three arms and three legs, right? So say, like, your far right leg was painful, then there'd be a lot more degrees of separation away. You'd, like, really be a stretch to extrapolate out to why something, a third appendage in your upper body was painful, right?
All right. You'd have that. We're exaggerating.
I put a lot of thought into this.
Yeah.
Okay, so basically we're going to talk about correcting imbalances.
Yes.
And identifying the difference between structural and functional imbalances.
Absolutely.
Right? So people come in and they say, you know, I'm compensating for something, that's why X hurts.
Yeah.
And it's like, okay, well, we need to first figure out if what you're compensating for is, like, a structural problem. Like, structural problem means, you know, you've torn your ACL in the past. You tore your labrum in your shoulder. You've broken a bone. You separated your shoulder. Something like that. Jesus.
Yeah.
Coming through garbage the window. Holy
yeah, so
shit.
If there's a problem with the structure of your body, something like joints, ligaments, something within that joint, like a meniscus, labrum, anything like that, that we rely on the structure of that to provide stability, that would be a structural problem. That's a little bit harder to fix, and it's going to be a little bit more of a long-term care.
Sure.
As opposed to a functional problem, which we just talked about, would more so be dysfunction, right? Dysfunctional movement pattern or something like that. We learned a movement wrong, or say we turn one way at our desk.
Yeah,
every single day,
movement.
Over and over and over. So, you know, 9 to 5, you turn to your right.
Yeah.
Then you go to the gym after that and you try a squat. You're probably going to turn to your right a little bit, right?
Well, I find, like, the structural issues are easier to like, pattern recognize, or easier to anticipate the problems that go wrong because they're consistent, right? Like,
absolutely.
You understand biomechanics where it's like, okay, we already know, we're given the cause, which is really nice, which, like, with functional imbalances, we don't know the cause.
Yeah.
Is it shitty coaching? Is it repetitive movement? Is it, you know, a bad programming? Is it bad exercise selection? Is it bad motor recruitment or motor patterning? So it's like, there's so many different options for the cause, and that's really what we have to dig down to for both, right? Like,
absolutely.
But the structure, you're given a gift. If someone comes in, my knee hurts, I have an ACL surgery. It's like, okay, this is a pretty common one. So it's like, let's look at what the ACL does.
Mm-hmm.
It stops that anterior translation of the tibia on the femur. Okay, perfect. What do we know that else that does that? Hamstrings. So your rehab is going to have a ton of hamstrings. If you've had surgery, then we're probably going to actually have to start with strengthening the quads first, because, mm-hmm. I mean, that's where they're going to go in. The big thing with that is understanding too, like, this is sort of maybe more for more like clinicians listening, what surgery was done. Because what they used to do for ACL surgeries, take part of your fucking hamstring. Like, oh, you're not going to need that. So they graft part of your hamstring tendon.
Absolutely.
Then they put that down for your ACL. So it's like,
now we're fucked because it's like the thing we would need to call on to compensate is like, think of stability as 100%, right? That's a goal that everyone should strive for. But if you lose, and within that 100%, there's a functional and structural component, right? So you need to tip the scales regarding, like, if you're missing structural, you need to make sure that functional tips the scales higher so we make 100% and we stay balanced in that scale. If you don't sort of super compensate on the other side when you're missing that structural stability, then you're always going to be at a higher risk for like re-injury or different injuries, like regardless of what you do, right?
And that's exactly why you see people who have a torn labrum, but they strengthen the rotator enough that they can function just fine.
I got one.
Yeah, exactly.
I drive by my labrum every day. It sits on the corner of Oakwood and Dela Cruz Boulevard. Oh. The other part of it is on the hood of some girl's Chevy Suburban. Like, I literally, like, do not... But it's been... Dude, it's 4 years. It'll be 4 years this August.
Exactly.
That I got fucking T-boned by that car.
And I'm sure you bench press at least once a week.
200 keys, man. Yeah,
exactly.
Strength is back, dude. I
can't fucking squat that.
No, it's just... But that's the thing. It's like the amount of functional stability I now need, especially with the shoulder, right? Like, the knee is a different animal because the knee is meant to be stable,
right?
Where the shoulder is meant to be mobile. Mm-hmm. But now, I mean, when I got hit by that car, it was way too mobile. It was like Mel Gibson in Lethal Weapon 2 mobile. Like, it fully dislocated. So it's like we've passed that elastic portion of mobility and then move into plastic deformation. For any of you, I mean, I could see that chart in my head where it's like, that's when you need to really try and push the scales hard the other direction, because my labrum is not going to grow back. Right. I mean, without surgery, and even then, surgery, like long-term outcomes of a surgery like that are the same as if you took a conservative approach. But that's, then you have to identify like the structure of each joint, right? Or the function of each joint.
And this is a great way to go about identifying those dysfunctions or those functional movement patterns that we don't have working correctly. It's pretty easy to find out what's going on if there's, like you said, if there's something structurally wrong, right? There's usually history, some imaging, you know, some way. But that functional stability, that functional movement pattern that we have, it's a little bit less intuitive to find that out. You have to actually do some digging, and the approach I like to use is a joint by joint approach, and I'll compare one side to the other.
Yeah.
So if someone's having trouble, say they're not hitting depth in their squat, or they're rotating in their squat, or they look down after their set of squats and their, you know, their right foot is open to the left wall and their left foot's facing straight ahead of them.
Yeah.
Right? So there's some sort of rotation going on there. So what I'll do is I'll either watch that person or I'll get some video of that person squatting. I'll start either bottom up, top down, doesn't really matter, but I'll assess each joint, how it's moving through the movement, what it's doing, and I'll compare it to the other side. Make sure they're moving symmetrically. All right, ankles are okay. Let's look at the knees. All right, if there's something going on with the knees, it's probably not from the knee, right? It's usually ankle or hip.
Yeah.
Look at the hips and see, you can really see that rotation in the hips. And I'll look at the whole, especially for a squat, I'll look at the whole upper body as one unit. Because you'll see rotation one way or another. And then from that, you can work back and figure out, all right, this hip is rotated back or this one's forward. Yeah. Or more externally rotated over here, internally rotated.
So you do that all loaded with the movement? Like you'll look at that under load and be like, okay, I'll look at the video, watch it once, ankles, watch it again, knees, watch it again, hip. Okay.
Absolutely. And I'll usually, it's not always loaded. It depends on, so it's going to be a little different for everyone, but these things will come out at a different point for different people, depending on the level of dysfunction.
Yeah.
Right? If it's someone that can barely squat, you know, their body weight, then it's going to come out a lot sooner than someone like you who's squatting, you know, 700 pounds.
Yeah.
It's probably going to take at least, I'd say, 70 to 80% of your
one
rep max.
That's a really good point. Yeah, I never thought of that. But now, I'm going to take this one further. So we've subdivided structural and functional, right?
Yes.
It's basically we can rename that traumatic and non-traumatic, right? Traumatic would be structural.
To some extent.
Yeah, yeah.
You can have traumatic injuries that cause functional dysfunction. Is that
dysfunction
a thing?
Or just dysfunction, period?
It can cause dysfunction of the soft tissue.
Sure.
Right? So I can, you know, pull a hamstring sprinting and then that'll tighten up. I'll get some muscle spasm around that, and it can cause, you know, some hip rotation in my squat, things like that.
Okay.
So,
all right. Well, so like injury versus like acute versus subacute, maybe.
Okay.
So we have structural and functional, aka acute, subacute. But then I think we also need to look at passive versus active. That's something that, like, you know, have a clinician do, and that's something that I do a lot, is like, let's see how you move without any weight on you at all. Mm-hmm. Let's see how I can move you. Yeah. Right? Like, can you get as much, or can I force as much internal rotation on your hip, just laying face off of my table, totally disarmed, as you can get, you know, when you go through like a single leg RDL, or if you go through some sort of active internal rotation drill, because that's going to tell us, you know, if this is something that can be fixed with movement or needs to be fixed by maybe more like a treatment route, right? Like, if I can take your hip and, or like, you know, say you, everyone lacks internal rotation. So you talked about when you either watch a person squat and they finish and they realize that the right foot is pointed way out. That's usually a cardinal sign of lacking internal rotation of the hip. If so you hit that depth position in the squat, that foot wants to flare out. More often than not, that's an internal rotation issue. But if I can put you on my table and I can't get any internal rotation either, then it could be more of like a capsular issue, right? Now we need to look like maybe a little more dense into the soft tissue anatomy, where it's like, if I can get that full range of motion, if I can get you on my table, I can internally rotate your hip 45, 50 degrees, but you're still turning out of the bottom of the squat. Then it's not the problem, right? It's not the hip. We need to look elsewhere. We need to look to the pelvis, look to the hip flexors, look to the lower back, spinal stability. So,
and even taking it back to last episode, it could be things as simple as awareness, right? Yeah. Proprioception.
Yeah.
Are you able to think about internally rotating or externally rotating that hip in your squat and actually do it? Know what that is?
Well, I think too, like, the difference between, because everyone strives for symmetry, right? There's like really good research with like kids in athletics that the more symmetrical their joint positions are from like an so I'm going to use the word arthrokinematics, which it basically means
so many syllables.
Yeah, right. But it's just like joint. It's like joint physics. Yeah, yeah. It's so a lot of, there's some fucking online PTs and chiros. And I'll use big words, but I'll recognize when I'm using a big word and define what that word means instead of like, I hope no one asked me a question on this word.
Yeah, dude, those people that use big words just so you don't question them. I'm not going to name
drop, but there's someone out there that uses the word arthrokinematics a lot, and I'm not sure understands what it means.
You're going to tell me who you're talking about.
I will absolutely do that off camera. I've gotten into too many social media knife fights lately, so I'm really trying to like not get into that, but basically it's like you need to understand I totally forgot where I was going with that. Arthrokinematics, what was I saying?
Shit, where are we at?
Yeah. Okay, but I mean, so you need to understand,
we're talking about unilateral passive versus active.
Okay. Yeah. And then when take a step out from there even further, objective versus subjective symmetry. What you feel to be symmetrical and what I see to be symmetrical, right? Especially if we both train in like gyms. It's not 24-hour fitness. There's no mirrors.
Awareness. I'm just trying to get into the subconscious.
Okay, we're going to drop subliminal messages in here from time to time.
If you play it backwards, you're going to do some weird shit.
So we've talked structural, we've talked functional, we've talked acute injuries. But now I think objective versus subjective symmetry.
Yeah.
Right? Like, if I close all the lights down in the gym and you do a bodyweight squat, then we turn the lights on and we show where you are. Like, you do a good one with like a jumping in place is really good.
Yeah.
Right? Because it unloads you and it sees where your posture is pulling you into position. And then if you open your eyes, you're like, oh shit. Yeah. Right? One foot is way behind you, one foot's way in front of you. So it's like, that's a really good test. And that's why I like passive range of motion. Like, you doesn't have to be a clinician to just assess, like, hey man, come here and lift my try and stretch my one hamstring. Put my hip into full flexion. See if I can match that on either side.
Yeah.
See if I can match abduction, adduction either side, rotation. And that's another thing too. You talked about the joint by joint approach. So you can assess that during a movement. Like, I'm gonna watch your ankles when you squat.
Yeah.
Right? But doing that unloaded passively, because it's like, that can be difficult. Like, if your foot collapses, right, is that an ankle issue or is that a hip issue?
Yeah,
right?
Absolutely.
Is that a lack of external rotation of the hip? Mm-hmm. Is that, or it could be a structural issue. Are you missing part of your medial meniscus? Have you blown out your ACL? Have you torn your MCL? Right? So there's a lot to unpack when it comes to identifying the causes, because too many people just chase symptoms, right?
Right.
Like,
right. It's a portion of a range of motion they're looking for.
Yeah.
Like, I can't reach depth in my squat, or my chest is dropping in my squat. I get onto the toes in my squat or in my snatch, something like that. So they have this one piece of information,
yeah,
and then they're not doing any investigative work,
yeah,
to look at what's causing this, or they just use like a shotgun approach,
yeah,
instead of actually using that time efficiently, effectively, finding out, you know, like going joint by joint or going one side of your body at a time,
yeah,
to actually find the root of the problem and then fix that.
Any specific movements or assessments that you have people do to spot out imbalances?
I'll do something very similar to what you said. I will do unloaded passive,
yeah,
range of motion. The big thing for me, internal external rotation,
yeah,
of the hip. That's huge. Another thing that gets looked, especially I'm targeting this towards a squat a lot because this is where I see it.
Okay.
Squatting things overhead, like, yeah, overhead pressing, I'll see people, you know, rotating that upper body. So hips and shoulders, I guess, are, yeah, the two things I address most. But I'll definitely look at active passive range of motion. The things I'll assess in the hip, the rotation, and then the one that gets overlooked sometimes is abduction. Because,
yeah,
if we're internally rotating in that squat, to compensate, there's that word.
Boom.
For that, what we should be doing is abducting.
Yeah.
Right? If you have an adducted, so knee toward midline,
yeah,
and internally rotated, yeah, squat, your fucking MCLs are screaming at you.
Yeah.
Right? So if you're internally rotating in that squat, you have to be pushing those knees out,
yeah,
even further. So that's one that gets overlooked a lot. And as far as shoulders go, I'm sure you see this too, flex spine, yeah, and internally rotated
shoulder. And that's the thing too with, like, so, with the shoulder imbalances, it's, you're just, like you sort of alluded to a little bit when we're talking about the squat, where people just focus on that one piece of information, mm-hmm, but it's like, usually it's a combination, right? Like, it's not someone is just so drastically deficient in ankle mobility that that's why they pitch forward in the squat.
Yes.
They probably have issues with hip flexion. They probably have issues with thoracic extension. So it's like,
mm-hmm,
people just fall out from one single point on the graph and then create an algorithm just for that single joint. So the shoulder's a little simpler to follow. So it's like, shoulder issues, especially with powerlifters, are so common, right? So like the bench press is our main movement. But that's such a... That's very mid-range as far as full capability of the shoulder. Like, I would deem the overhead press to be the king of upper body exercises, right?
Yeah.
Like, it's axial loading in the furthest point away from your center of gravity, right? So the amount of compensating, yeah. We should have a little bell that we ring every time we say it.
Compensation.
We should have, like, it's like a swear jar, like a compensation jar. But every time we load overhead, you're not going to really be able to actively compensate from your shoulder too much. So when people start compensating their body position from their spine, like, that's, mm-hmm, when it gets pretty, like, precarious. So if you're missing thoracic extension flexion, if you're missing scapular retraction and depression, or if you're missing the ability to externally rotate, unless you have a structural issue, you probably have a functional issue with every step along the way,
oh,
right? Like, you're not going to get that 100% mobility from just, oh, you know what, just do rotator cuff stuff.
Yeah.
Like, no. If your scapula is still in a, you know, an elevated and protracted position, you're going to be missing a third of that range of motion. So, I mean, if you're listening right now and you're not driving, raise your hand overhead.
You're not driving.
So if you raise your hand overhead, this is 180 degrees, right? Straight line.
It should be.
So if you,
and
like,
you get your hand,
yeah,
overhead,
if you, like, Zig Heil, Donald Trump, bring that shoulder to, like, 120 degrees, that's 2/3 of the entire range of motion, right? So break 90, go just above the horizon, about 20, 30 degrees. That's no movement of the scapula at all.
Literally,
so I could, yeah, I could anchor your scapula to your rib cage, and you will still be able to salute Zas Führer, right? But if you were to get
too many Hitler references,
yeah, this has got to be, man. I swear we have. Never mind. But if you get to that full overhead, that last 60 degrees, that last third of that range of motion is going to come from the scapula accommodating for that movement, right? So if we just worry about rotation but don't worry about scapular positioning, then we're missing part of the problem. We're missing, you know, 33.333% of the problem.
Mm-hmm.
Well, if that scapula needs to be addressed, we can't address the scapula without addressing the thoracic spine. Because the thoracic spine, if, like, hyperflexed or hyperkyphotic, is going to set that trajectory for the rib cage, which makes the pseudo joint with the scapula. So if that rib cage is flared out of the back because we have a flexed upper back, so it's like, yeah, you're missing rotation of the shoulder. Great. But it's not 100% the problem. It's maybe like 30, 30, 30. It's maybe a third of the shoulder problem comes from balancing rotation. A third of the shoulder problem comes from positioning that those scapula in that retracted and depressed position. But you can't do that without fixing the first third, which would be thoracic extension. So Fixing imbalances of the upper body is a little bit more obvious when you explain it to that to people in that way. And I think too, because it's a non-weight bearing joint, right? Yeah. Where hips become a little trickier, and this is one I'll use, lunging. I mean, if you can't stand on one leg, you shouldn't be squatting with two, right? So I'll use this to sort of draw a comparison to like gait cycle, because I think that's really important. Like gait analysis, like how you walk can tell you a lot about how you're gonna lift. We alluded a little bit to like pelvic torsion, but I use like a full gait cycle on one hip. So like do a long stride walking lunge, put tape on the ground where your toes are at, and then do it on the other side. Not many people can match the effort on one side or the other and have that objective symmetry be subjectively symmetrical. Like, sure, they might be able to stride the same length, left foot forward and right foot forward, but it's going to feel drastically different through their hips, whether they're more stable on their dominant leg or if you have pelvic torsion, and this is something that could be an entire episode in itself, like the leg that can go forward easier is usually the pelvis that is rotated backwards, right? Posteriorly tilted more. So understanding like pelvic mechanics for lower body stability issues is like massive, massive, massive. Because even like for something like a squat, you talked about looking at shoulder position, right? And I think too, like the pelvis can dictate, like you'll see people with like one elbow forward and one elbow back a little bit more, or one shoulder or one hand closer to their face and one wider way. That could come from the pelvis. Because you got to think, people think the bar is on their back and that's where the force is coming from. It's like, think of the force coming up from the floor, right? And I think that's what loses people a lot. Like when they start having shoulder problems and elbow problems when they squat, they look right to the shoulders and they look right to the elbows. I mean, when you guys overhead squat, like that's the most...
It's so good.
Humbling movement in the gym.
You can identify so many asymmetries from an overhead squat. But yeah, getting a little bit past what you're saying, because I think it's getting a little bit very, well, not a little bit, but it's getting very detailed at this point. Let's talk about, let's kind of move forward into fixing
imbalance. Yeah, that's a novel idea.
Right? Yeah, so there's a lot of different ways to identify them. You probably suck at it, so come to me and Jordan. We'll tell you.
Shameless plug. Just wait for it. They're coming.
Well, people, just like you said, people say, I'm compensating, I'm doing this, I'm doing that, but they don't really know, right? Unless you're taking like a joint by joint approach, or you have some sort of idea of how to actually assess this stuff.
Yeah, you need to have a working knowledge of what normal operates like.
Right, and if that's over your head, let it be over your head, ask someone else, right? But let's go about a good way to correct these, right? The best way, in my opinion, is unilateral work, right? So whether that's, you know...
For the uninitiated, single arm, single leg stuff. Yes. So don't give me shit for being too fucking detailed.
Yes.
I was over the top with unilateral, like an asshole.
Single arm, single leg.
Yeah.
And then another step further, kind of what you're getting at with the shoulder being, you know... Open chain, closed chain. So open chain exercises.
Okay.
When possible.
Define.
So yes, closed chain, squat, I'm connected to the ground.
You're moving you.
I'm moving me, yes.
Yeah.
Open chain, I'm moving
something
an object in space.
Yeah.
Right? So a little bit harder to do with the lower body.
Yeah.
But shoulders, fantastic. Any sort of rotation, overhead pressing, you said, is fantastic. If you do that stuff with... dumbbells, kettlebells, plates, anything like that.
Yeah.
I'm going to say that's a much better option than using a barbell where it's going to force compensation.
Sure.
Right? So if one shoulder is a little bit more externally rotated, that's going to force the other shoulder into internal rotation just by simply going through the movement in what we perceive as a normal movement pattern.
Yeah, because the objective outcome of barbell movements is very easy to define. Yeah.
Point A, point B.
Yeah, exactly.
Right? Did we get from point A to point B? Yes, we
good
did.
Good three-way lights.
Exactly, right? But a lot of this is, that very good point, it's how we get from point A to
qualitative.
Point B. Right? So if you have a dumbbell and one's pressed all the way out in front of you and one's all the way behind you, you're going to feel fucking weird, right? So the idea, don't even use two dumbbells at a time. Use one dumbbell.
Sure.
Maybe even, I know we talked a little bit of shit on this. But in the last
shake
episode.
Shake weight? We're going to use a shake weight?
always use a shake weight. The only problem with the shake weight is they don't make them heavy enough.
Oh, that's a problem.
Yeah. Yeah.
Sure. That's the only problem with it. You got to run a fucking battery into
when I'm in here overhead squatting my shake weight with no shirt on in an empty gym. Yeah. You know, I want to be able to move a lot of weight.
Yeah, that's that'll lower blood testosterone levels.
Dramatically. Yeah. Anyway, that's what I was getting at, though. I don't even remember.
So you're going overhead press with something we talked shit on before. What did we
talk
about?
No. What we talked shit on last episode was using a mirror.
Oh, okay.
Right? A mirror can be something that's very helpful for this because it can give you that visual cueing throughout the process.
Yeah.
So if you say, all right.
That's if you're a loner and you don't have friends, though.
Yeah, because
I think a better way forward is that Rosetta Stone. Have someone that knows what they're talking about. Have them tell you what external rotation is, right? No, fuck, I got bills to pay, man. Come in my office. No, but like have someone tell you what external rotation is. And then as you go through it, like external rotate your shoulder. I am. No, you're not.
Yeah.
And then they go, oh, that's what that's supposed to feel like. Yes. But having the feedback, regardless if it's audio or visual, like.
Exactly.
Yeah, no, I definitely agree. But I think understanding the graduation process of stability or corrective exercise for fixing imbalance. So the overhead is a good one because it's something a lot of people struggle with. So it's like, okay, maybe we aren't mobile enough or stable enough to get into that position loaded yet. So let's just, all we got to do is just regress, right? We know the triad of things we need to work on, that scapular retraction depression, thoracic extension, glenohumeral rotation. Mm-hmm. So let's just put in our correctives, but load in a position that is working through a progression of flexion until we're in that full overhead, right?
Yeah.
So like
striving for forward.
Yes. Yeah, so I mean, say you, whether it be structural or functional imbalance that you're suffering from. So say you're like post-op, or say you're someone that just hasn't lifted in 20, 30 years since their D1 scholarship when they graduated high school. Now they got four kids and they're trying to get back into lifting. Maybe the most overhead you can get into is a horizontal press. Like a flat dumbbell press. That's fine. That's progress stimulus of instability while we work on a mobility in the back end. Mm-hmm. So we'll start you off bar. Sure. That's fine. Let's move you to dumbbells. Dumbbells. All right. Let's move you to kettlebells. Let's see if you can do those kettlebells bottom up. So we've kept the same range of motion. We've taken the stimulus of instability, progressed it in that range of motion. We graduate to bottom under kettlebell horizontal bench press, right? Okay. Let's take it up a notch. Let's take that chair and put it on a bit of an incline.
Yeah.
Let's start you off with dumbbells. See how you do. Good. More unstable. More unstable. Mastered. All right, let's kick it up a notch. And literally, you can just use that chair as a measuring stick of progression until we get to the point where we can go seated overhead. Like, all right, let's go half kneeling overhead. Control the rib cage. Let's start with like a dumbbell. Good. All right, let's go kettlebell. All right, now let's get you on both feet. So understanding the regression, right? Because I think people, again, they worry just about that end goal, that A to B. Now, once you explain, like, okay, hey, we're going to try and get into this overhead position with, you know, a good spinal position, that elbow face in the front of the room, that rib cage down, lumbar spine under control, they go, oh, okay. And they still just think an A to B. And they're like, in their head, they're trying to adjust for it, but they just don't have it yet. So understanding or mapping out a regression, like if they're close, like, okay, let's just take this down to like a landmine press. We'll do that, work on our correctives in the back end. Then in a couple weeks, we'll go back to the overhead, see how we do. But if you're totally effed up, right down to horizontal press, and then just slowly work that arc of flexion into that unstable position until we're loaded overhead.
I like that a lot. And something that I truly believe in, I'm a little bit upset I didn't start with this, is that if you can't get into a position, first of all, you shouldn't be loading that position.
Huge.
Right?
Powerlifters, listen, your low bar rocks, like your low bar position, if you can't get into it, like, I can sit here and get my hands into that position where that bar will be on my back.
Without any bar, cueing, with no bar, no without PVC. Without
something to leverage myself on.
Exactly.
Yeah, for sure.
So if you can't get into a position on your own, don't get in that position under load.
Yeah.
Second of all, if you want to be able to get into that position on your own, spend more time in that position.
Wow.
Yes. Fucking so if you have a really shitty squat, grab a weight, grab a medicine ball, something, counterbalance yourself so you can maintain a good position.
Yeah.
Whatever you have to do to cue that, and then just hang out just in that position for a long period of time. Yeah. Like not 30 seconds, not 45 seconds, like 5 minutes.
Yeah.
If you can spend 5 minutes in a counterbalance squat, I guarantee you come in the gym tomorrow, you're probably going to be able to squat below parallel.
Sure.
Right?
Yeah. I think it's huge now, even in like research, like tempo training and time under tension from like a mobility standpoint, like static stretching. I mean, I think will always have a place, should always have a place. I think there's this huge, and it's almost cool to shit on static stretching. It's like, dude, you know what? It's like fucking nihilist.
That's like a gym teacher fact. Yeah, I'm not picking on gym teachers, but it's like, you know, you have that old gym teacher that, you know, got his education who knows how long ago. He's like, oh no, that's bad for you, like you can't do that.
Yeah.
Or like, you know, it's just so old school. Like,
But I think, but it's cool now, right? Like so many of these like podcasts that have clinicians on there, they just have this nihilistic view. It's like, what do you do with your patients? Just fucking read research to them until they run out of your office? Like, well, there's no research to prove that. And it's like, dude, I got a fucking job to do. Like this guy's got to get back under a bar and start lifting some weights. I'm not going to sit here and read citation after citation. I'm going to move. I'm going to put him under a bar. I'm going to regress them. The evidence-based practice is like the cool fucking crunchy granola, which is we practice evidence-based,
absolutely,
but it's like understanding that triad and understanding where, you know, where research is lacking and where I know more than some fucking dickhead with a white coat in some goddamn university lab somewhere.
And you know what I think the new I'm gonna call it a fad because who knows how long it'll stay around for,
all right,
is static stretching right into loading.
Yeah.
So once the idea is you free up a range of motion, then you immediately load it. Yeah. Not under heavy load, but say you do like a couch stretch each side 3 minutes and then you just sit in a squat.
Yeah.
You know, or you do some bodyweight squats.
Yeah.
I think that's kind of what a lot of the new research is leaning towards.
Yeah.
But
well, I mean, I'm fine with that. And I totally see the logical consistency in that, but it's like there's so many people that have this air of superiority about it and they're just, they don't believe in anything. They're literally like manual therapist nihilists. Like they just like nothing works and like they're on some fucking myth busting fatwa to like, this is all bullshit. Like don't stretch, don't foam roll. It's like, all right, fucking sit in the corner and die. I'm going to go lift some heavy ass weights. It's such bullshit. I mean, this is a total tangent, but it's like when it comes to fixing imbalances, right? Like a lot of people get on this research high horse, but if someone comes into my office, they are at no point their lives as controlled as the methodologies used in empirical evidence, right?
Oh.
Like, you know, there's no research that goes, I'm going to get, you know, on two ends of the spectrum, I'm going to get top level athletes. Like there's no research that has world record holder powerlifters or, you know, Division I football players or NFL football players. Like there's just not enough sample size to accumulate these high end athletes. So why would I take average statistical research and apply that to above average performers and want them to better their performance? It's mm-hmm. like they don't want to get healthy, they want to get better.
Oh, right? Absolutely.
I mean
talking about fractions, a percentage of, you know, very minuscule things that you might not even be able to measure.
Oh sure.
Yeah.
Like if you run like a 4.8 40 and you want the difference between you going cracking the roster of an NFL team is shaving off 0.3, that's what you need to shave off your time.
Yeah.
And it's like, all right, well, you know, according to John Doe et al., this 1977 study shows that you should be doing like partial range. It's like, no, fuck that guy. Because they're not talking about this 250-pound monster I got in my office, right?
Exactly.
And but on the flip side of that spectrum, and probably more applicable, is like there's also no research study for like, you know, the soccer mom that's going through a divorce that has four kids in a minivan and commutes in from like 3 hours away every day and works four jobs to try and pay the bills. So it's like trying to figure out what's wrong first. So finding the cause, structural, functional, finding the right approach, regression, progression to their problem, but then finding the approach that will fix the individual that will be able to be implemented. Because it's like you can go off research and like, oh, these 10 exercises done in cluster is going to be the best thing for you. Sounds good. Got no fucking time. See you later. So it's like, I think it's something we spoke on before, but it's like finding the right exercise for the individual. Like,
absolutely.
If you came to me, it was like, okay, this is what you got to do. Like, yeah, sure. I'm not wearing shoes. It's 9:30 in the morning, and apparently I'm employed. I clearly have time to do all of these exercises. Yeah.
But I think a general template you can go by that we just sort of haphazardly established this is get into the proper range of motion.
Sure.
Right? Once you can get in and maintain that proper range of motion through the full movement pattern, start to load it in a way that's going to be easy for you at first and then progress it to something that's very hard to maintain.
Yeah.
And by the time you get to that, maintaining good movement pattern is something that's hard to do, whether that's progressing with weight, instability, whatever.
Good point.
Time could be a progression.
Yeah, just understand what each stimulus is in the movement.
Yeah, and progressing that. Then by the time you get to that point, the other end of that, where you can maintain full range of motion the entire time under either instability, under load for long durations of time.
Yeah.
When you get back to bilaterally loading on both sides, yeah, whether that's squatting, barbell pressing, whatever it is, you're probably going to be in a lot better shape than you were before.
But to your point, so that's not the end game. Right? So we've done our progression. We've done flat bench, dumbbells, progress each stimulus along the way to get, whether that's time under tension or exercise selection or range of motion or whatever, tempo. When you get to that point, when you're now out of pain and you're, you know, we'll say, quote unquote, balanced and even and symmetrical, and you start loading again, and your goal is to only get stronger, you need to maintain that buffer of strength and stability. Because all the injuries I see are when strength outruns stability. So it's like, mm-hmm, you know, say you get to the point like, oh, look, I can get like barbell press and it's good. And that's immediately the point where people stop doing all their shit, right? That's immediately when people are like, they stop doing corrective. So then what do? They head right back towards that pain threshold. They, yep, go right back towards that in that that unbalanced threshold that they hit before until they cross the line again, pain shows up, they can't do what they want to do anymore. Well, it's like, not only do you need to keep up the work that got you there, you need to do more to keep you there. So think, yeah, of it like this. There's a, I forget the book, but there's a good quote. It's basically, your body is like a bank that you would never do business with, right? So imagine like if we had money, and then imagine if we had a lot of money. So, but like, you know, the rich get richer, right? Because if, yeah, you put more money in the bank, the more you're going to accumulate in interest. But like, the more time you put into your body, the more time you have to put into your body. Right? Like you talk about like taking those fractions of a second off and how, yeah, much, like you talk to any Olympic sprinter, they could spend years trying to shave 0.1 seconds off.
Oh, absolutely.
Right? But it's like, if that was a bank, you would never fuck. Okay, this is what's going to happen, sir. When you're going to do $1 billion,
is shit.
It's zero. We're going to actually start, yeah, taking money from you past a certain point. That's literally how your body operates.
That's so true.
So it's like, once you get to that, you know, once you've reached that promised land and you're good, you're out of pain, you're back and fully functional, if you want to get stronger, you need to get more stable.
Yeah, absolutely. It sounds like kind of what you're saying is health is a lifelong pursuit.
Weird. That's a little too... I'm not saying that. That's a little too... I think
that's, it was, all right, then I'll take it. You live in the Bay Area. I'll say that. Yeah. I'll say that because this is something that if you're not working on constantly, like you said, it once that pursuit of strength outweighs the pursuit of quality movement,
yeah,
you're going to get hurt.
Yeah.
Right? If you're moving a heavy barbell, that's great. If you're moving it a heavy barbell shitty,
yeah,
you're going to get hurt.
Yeah. And that's the thing. The heavier the barbells get and the less our stability progresses with our strength, then that's game over, right? Very rarely do I see people get injured while able to stay in good positions.
Yeah.
Right? If you can stay in a good position, you're stable enough. I mean, if you fail a lift, you fail a lift. That's fine. But if you fail a lift because you just pause in the middle of a squat and you're just like, okay, I can't overcome this weight, yeah, anymore. I'm not strong enough. I'm in this position and you slowly start to just descend back through. Spotters grab you.
Yeah,
it's fine. But it's when you're fucking like over the top, you lose spinal stability. The bar rolls over the back of your, yeah, head. You're fucking laying on the platform. Your one leg's shaking. It's like, yeah, we weren't stable enough to stay in a good position.
Yeah.
I mean, very rarely is strength the limiting factor to strength, right? To the expression of strength. It's, yeah, usually you can't stay in positions well enough or long enough to express that strength. Mm-hmm. So the more people realize that that is your rate limiting factor to getting strong, the more people should prioritize that in their exercise, right? In their workout routine, whether that be on a day-to-day or on a macro level as far as planning it, right? Mm-hmm. These people will write out their programs for like, you know, squat progressions and deadlift progressions, and I'm gonna do linear block or undulated periodization, but it's like, I'll see programs that say rotator cuff stuff. Like, okay, yeah, you're gonna do that, right? Sure. Yeah. So it's like,
I'll see programs that don't have any of that.
Sure.
Right?
Oh yeah.
It's just your main lifts, and then, you know, there might be some accessory,
yeah,
but it's not the appropriate accessory to be paired with what you're doing.
Yeah.
Right? So rotator, for, I work more so with CrossFitters, Olympic lifters.
Yeah.
Rotator cuff stuff, core stuff, that's so fucking important.
Yeah.
Right? I don't care if you can squat 3 times your body weight. If you can't press body weight, like, what,
yeah,
good is it?
Yeah. No, seriously. So, I just think the take home from this is understanding what objective and subjective stability
imbalance look like.
Yeah.
So you have an objective, like, because everyone knows what a 300-pound bench press looks like. Yeah. Right?
Point A to point B.
Point A to point B. But understanding the point A to point B of every joint that needs to be maintained throughout the way. Like the strength of the pecs, the strength of the delts, the strength of the lats, whatever, that's easy. That's fun. That's quote unquote the fun stuff. But what kind of requisite range of motion do you need for your ankles to get into a deep squat?
Yeah.
Right? Exactly. 55 degrees of dorsiflexion. You know why I know that? Because I read it in a book. Right? But it's like knowing if you assess your ankles, like, okay, maybe this is my limiting factor. No? All right, let's go up the chain. So being able to keep an inventory, 55 degrees, what did I say? Being able to keep an inventory of each joint's position and what is necessary for that, like for your movement that you're trying to progress. So keeping an eye, not just on like how your numbers are moving, but how each body part that makes up that movement is moving, right? If the shoulders start locking down, say you're putting on body weight and you realize that all of a sudden you can't scratch the middle of your back anymore. It's like, that's cause for concern. Yep. Work on that before you work on anything else.
Absolutely.
Anything to close on?
Man, I think that's it. Just get in good positions, be able to maintain them, and then get strong.
Yeah, yeah. Definitely prioritize balance over over everything at this point.
Unloaded balance.
Yeah, and then work from there.
Yeah, that's it.
Jin?
Yeah. Guys, check out brain fart. Check out EngineFitness.com.
You think for having a morning drink, like, it's 10 o'clock in the morning. I'll be down for some gin. Yes, more of a whiskey guy myself.
I'm more of a coffee guy. Yeah. Anyways, check out Engine Fitness. Use code RXDRadio. I heard he's got some new stuff coming in.
Oh, shit.
Especially,
Deezer alert.
Yeah, yeah. Change plates, kilo plates. Check them out.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Lunderjack Productions.
Yeah.
Everybody, Kyle in Toronto. Check him out. I think his website is up. I would Google them.
Google LinkedIn.
That's, you know, LinkedIn is creepy because they can see who like looks you up. You ever have that?
Oh, really?
That's weird. Okay, clearly no one goes on your profile. That's wild. Awkward. All right.
I don't even have a LinkedIn.
I mean, we don't really have jobs, so we don't need it.
True.
But yeah, that's it for today. Until next time.
All right. See you guys.